Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's JFK talking about a plan to go to the moon. And we all know that happened. David Blake, the 20th anniversary of that tomorrow.
Wow.
And I guess it was 50th anniversary, I beg your pardon, on July 20th. And I think they say it was around 9 o'clock at night or something when it happened here. I don't know exactly.
This is actual touchdown.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm confused about that in terms
about the takeoff and the touch. Yeah. Well.
I do know this, that there were two versions of a speech written, or I can't say that. One version because the president talked to them, right? But at the time, there was also a speech written for President Nixon if it didn't happen as it was supposed to. And I'll read you some words from that in a little bit, and they're kind of chilling.
Whoa.
Jim Bell joins us now, astronomer, planetary scientist from Arizona State University, and president of the Planetary Society. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Tom. How are you doing?
I am well, sir. I know you are probably jammed up, busy, what with the 50th anniversary going on, and I appreciate you giving us some of your time.
No worries. It's an exciting time, that's for sure, thinking about the past as well as the future.
Tell me, here's one thing I can't get my mind around, and I guess, Jim, as most people have been, I've been looking at the moon on my way into work, and it just astounds me still today that we were able to go from here to there, walk around, and come back, and we did that, what, three times?
Well, seven attempts and six were successful to land on the surface. You know, the one that didn't work was Apollo 13. You may have seen the movie or read the book. And but six times and 12 astronauts walked on the moon between 69 and 72. And you're right. It's incredible, given that the technology of the day was about equivalent to the technology in the key fob to your car, you know.
And even today, Jim, it would be an amazing thing to me to do that, to be able to – you know, and again, I don't mean to over-explain what everybody knows, but to blast off from this planet, you go all the way to the moon, you walk around, you get picked up, and then you come back, especially like you're saying with that technology. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they say that people actually got bored of this. I think that was maybe in Apollo 13, they had a scene about that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really impressive what we can do as a species when we put our minds to it. You know, when I mean, you played part of JFK's speech. You know, the nation set its mind to doing this, right? We devoted some of our precious national resources. It ended up taking something like 4% of the budget to do this, and that's about 10 times what NASA's budget is today. It took, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, 300, 400,000 people to make this happen. It took the greatest minds in the world were drawn to this project, and it inspired an entire generation. So personally, I'd love to see us do something like that again, right? And inspire a generation and do amazing things to lead the world like that.
Yeah, and there is, I think, a political component to this, and I don't mean to meld it with science, but at that time, when there is something like that, it unites the country in achieving a common goal, however lofty that goal may be. And it seems as though now, I don't know if we have in this country anything equivalent to that. Do we, Jim? Any kind of common goal that we're working toward?
You know, there are common goals that, but the times are different. You know, I mean, the battle to cure cancer, you know, lots of medical things like that that we're all agreed upon. It doesn't cross political lines. I think there is certainly a lot of support for America remaining the leader in exploring space. We've got a spectacular robotic program going on to explore planets around us, and the International Space Station required a lot of congressional and public support. But remember, Tommy, the times are different, right? Back in the 60s, it was the height of the Cold War, and it was, you know, it was us versus the commies, right? We had to prove that democracy and the free world was the way to go, and that, you know, we had to beat the Russians. And we don't have that geopolitical context that's driving a lot of that, a lot of space or science exploration today.
And that was my next question. Whenever you talk about a country doing something like this, it's going to either result in two things. Either you're going to have to create more, generate more revenue to do this, or you're going to have to cut something else, right? Because that's the way economics work. But at that time, how did they do it, Jim? Did they cut something? Did they tax people more? And how much more willing were people to do it then than they would be today?
Well, there was a lot of public support. You probably remember from the history books what a shock it was to the nation when the Sputnik satellite launched, when the Russians launched Sputnik in the late 50s. You know, it was the first time that that space became a part of everybody's, you know, conversation, everybody's daily life, and it really seemed like, wow, there's a real threat here to the country and to this democratic way of life. So that was a really uniting force. And you know, of course, we have had things happen. You know, 9/11 was something that brought the country together, right, against a common threat from the outside, and in a negative way, but, you know, it did bring the country together. So it's possible for us to do these kinds of things. There's a lot of people, a lot of teachers, educators, politicians that think that, you know, the next step for America might be getting the first people on Mars.
Well, we're going to take a break, Jim, and pick it up right here when we come back. And we'll also talk about the importance of going back to the moon. And how was it that they were able to, I guess is what I'm trying to ask. If you look at the new capsule, and I forgot the name of it, Jim, the name of it is what?
The Orion.
Orion. Amazingly, it's pretty similar to the Apollo capsule in terms of shape. So it amazes me that despite all of the technology that exists today, they got it right then. Jim Bell's our guest, astronomer and planetary scientist from Arizona State University, president of the Planetary Society. We're talking about on this 50th anniversary of the first successful landing on the moon. Should we go back? Should we go back to the moon? Should we maybe set our sights on Mars? And in addition to the scientific benefits of that, what could it mean just for us every day in terms of things that could be discovered? 9:17, back in a flash, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Fate has ordained that the men who went to the moon to explore in peace will stay on the moon to rest in peace. These brave men, Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin, know that there is no hope for their recovery, but they also know that there is hope for mankind in their sacrifice. That is a speech that was prepared for President Nixon in case the moon landing failed. And we all know that didn't happen, and those words just kind of put a chill in you just to hear them. Jim Bell, astronomer, planetary scientist from Arizona State University and president of the Planetary Society. So, Jim, you know, you talk about key fob and more technology in that than really there was available with the Apollo missions. But yet I mentioned that the Orion, I think, is a new capsule. Mm-hmm. It's in the shape of Apollo. So it is kind of amazing that they had it right then, huh?
Well, you know, physics is a wonderful thing, Tommy. And once you figure it out, it doesn't really change. A certain shape is the most efficient way to get through the atmosphere and to slow down. And my goodness, Isaac Newton figured out how to get between the Earth and the Moon back in the, you know, 17th century.
But so, I guess in terms of, wait, did he?
He figured out gravity. We know how to use gravity for a while. So,
but I guess what I'm wondering in terms of modeling computers, et cetera, if that would not have, through advanced looks at physics, somehow come up with something different. But again, Jim, keep in mind, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about as it relates to physics.
You know, certainly the materials have advanced incredibly. You know, all the modern materials that can, like the heat shield that was used for the shuttle or the return capsule for Apollo or Orion, many composites. You know, these things didn't exist in the 60s and 70s. So lots of advancements. But you're right. The basic physics is pretty much the same.
So why would we then want to go back to the moon? What is important? What could be gained from that? And especially something far more advanced going to Mars? And what would be involved in that?
Yeah, well, there's a number of reasons, and you touched on them before the break. You know, certainly there's the moon is a place that we can explore geologically and learn about the origin of the Earth-Moon system and all that kind of stuff. The Apollo astronauts did some of that and brought some moon rocks back that have taught us an enormous amount about the origin of the moon and our own planet and our own solar system. So there's a science aspect to it. There's a sort of a pragmatic engineering aspect to it. You know, developing the technologies again now that, you know, the Saturn V was mothballed in the early 70s. And so NASA's building a new rocket that will allow us to get back into deep space, like destinations like the moon or Mars. That rocket needs to be tested. Landers need to be tested. We need to learn again how to live off of our planet. Here's a great place right in our backyard called the moon where we can practice that. And then there's sort of also, you touched on this earlier, too, the geopolitical angle to it as well. You know, great nations do great things, right? And one of the reasons why America is the leader in the world is because we did things like go to the moon, because we do things like lead the space station project, because we do things like land the first rovers on Mars. And so there's a lot of international interest. You know, there's more than 60 space agencies around the world today. And nations that want to become great nations realize that being in space and doing things in space are part of that. It means you've achieved a certain level of technical competence, economic stability, et cetera. And space is part of our world now. So lots of reasons to do that. And NASA is looking to go back to the moon for all of those reasons. But I think that our country, at least NASA, has really set its sights on the frontier, right? And the moon is not the frontier anymore, right? People have been there. Robotic probes have been there. We need to go back and learn more about it. But the frontier is Mars, the red planet, the next one out from the Earth. And getting out there is just as hard for us today as getting to the moon was in the 1960s.
Now that we've exposed my ignorance of physics, thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. No, but seriously, how would it be different if we were to go to the moon, you know, in a couple of years, mm-hmm. as opposed to when we went back in 69 for the first time?
Well, I think that, you know, when we went for the first time, really it was about planting the flag, doing a little bit of work for a few hours to a few days on the surface, and then coming home. Now we're talking about really a larger cruise, more time on the lunar surface, more mobility, the ability to do more exploration, maybe to try to tap into some of the natural resources on the moon. You know, astronomers have discovered that there's ice buried near the north and south pole of the moon, and that's a resource that people will need when we live on the moon, when we have settlements in the future. If you don't have to bring the water from the Earth, boy, you're going to it's going to be so much easier if you can just extract it from the subsurface there. So all of those things mean spending more time, bringing more technology, more engineering, which means you need a heavy lift capacity. We need that SLS rocket that NASA is building. So lots of reasons to go back and lots of work to do to follow on from those original Apollo missions.
Which brings us to some of your current research and how it relates to Mars.
Right, right. And, you know, as I said, Mars is the frontier. And it's the most Earth-like planet in our solar system besides the Earth itself. And there's lots of evidence from all these robotic orbiters and landers and rovers that have been to Mars in the past 50 years. There's lots of evidence that it used to be a lot like the Earth early in the history of the solar system. There was flowing water on the surface. There were rivers, groundwater, and the entire climate of the planet has changed dramatically over the history of the solar system. But early on, it was a lot like the Earth. Did life form there? Is there any evidence of it? Could there be life in the subsurface of Mars today? Are we alone in the universe? I mean, we can answer these kinds of questions with these kinds of exploration missions, and that's why it's the frontier.
Somebody texted in, and I don't, man, whenever you mention this, all hell breaks loose, but this is what the text says, and it says, after we trash our planet, is there another planet that we could bail out to?
Yeah, no, that's actually a really, really valid point. You know, we are only now learning, and not fully applying, but learning how to live sustainably on our own planet. My belief, and I'm an optimist, Tommy, my belief is that everything we're learning about how to be sustainable in space, if we need to live on the moon, if we need to live on Mars, all of that experience, the recycling, the sustainability, the closed ecosystems, all of that kind of stuff is going to come back and help us do a better job on our own planet. Because, of course, only a tiny fraction of us get to go out into space. The rest of us have to figure out how to live sustainably on our own planet.
How far realistically could first of all, is the United States still a leader in space?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. You know, it's NASA is funded by the American taxpayers, and the amount of funding that NASA gets is more than all of the other space agencies in the world combined. So we are absolutely the leaders, and both in robotic space exploration as well as human space exploration.
So how far, I mean, is I hate to use the phrase, the sky the limit, but I mean, it could we conceivably go from planet to planet to planet and further out?
Why not, right? I mean, that's what we've done with the robotic missions in the past 50 years. Pretty much every major planet and moon in our solar system has, we've done the reconnaissance with the robotic space probes like Voyager missions and Viking and the Mars rovers, the Cassini mission to Saturn. You can look all these up on the NASA website. I mean, it's just spectacular. It's rewritten the textbooks for kids and teachers. And we've done that with the robotic program. We've only been out to the moon with the human program, but certainly there's lots of great science and exploration that can be done with people out there. And, you know, I don't think it's science fiction to imagine that in the decades and centuries ahead, people will move out into the solar system and we'll have human settlements on other worlds.
Jim, we're out of time. 10-second answer. How do you not get your mind blown when you think about the universe just extending on and on into infinity?
My mind is blown all the time by that, Tommy. Don't worry about it. The great thing is that we can grasp part of it. We can learn part of it and continue to explore.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your time. Astronomer, planetary scientist, I hit the wrong button, sorry about that, an astronomer and planetary scientist. New Orleans had some connections to the successful moon landing 50 years ago, and we will delve into that when we come back. Right now, it's time for an update from CBS on WWL.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.